As a thankful recipient of many, many skincare products over the years, I've learned to discern what is naturally actually activating my skin to rebalance and recalibrate on its own. That's what your skin is meant to be doing, and it keeps getting disrupted by all these choices that we make. So, when the founder and creator of Herbal Face Food reached out to me, I was all ears. I didn't know why at first. It turns out that Herbal Face Food is the most potent antioxidant skincare line on the market today, period. The raw plant ingredients in each of their products are never processed, never manipulated with synthetics or emulsifiers. These anti-aging botanicals are combined with the most precious plant concentrates, and they have changed my skin. Here's how. I'm going to talk about two of the products, the Herbal Face Food serums and the cream. The serums contain powerful phytoenzymes and antioxidants. These are activated and infused into your tissues. They hydrate and increase the resiliency of your skin, and they feel like they're plumping up your face. I use serum 1 daily. I use serum 2 when I'm tired and I need extra firming for my skin. And I use the X, which is also known as the cure, for a small patch of rosacea that flares up every now and again, which you cannot see because of these products. When you feed your skin with Herbal Face Food, you will feel real live ingredients at work. An activating flush, an invigorating tingle, some warmth, all of these are evidence of your skin healing at the cellular level and years of damage reversing. The cream is the most potent moisturizer I've ever tried, and I've tried them all. I live in the high desert. This cream contains 102 of the world's most powerful anti-aging botanicals and is also the world's first and only edible SPF with a protection rating of SPF 50+. And this is accomplished 100% by plant power. And you can expect intense hydration, soothing for your tired skin. You can expect to see inflammation calmed and rebuilding of elasticity, so your complexion looks and feels more smooth and more radiant. Herbal Face Food is not plant-based. It's plant-powered. It has the highest rating on the ORAC anti-aging scale. ORAC means oxygen radical absorbance capacity. I never knew what that meant before. The highest, over 30 million on that scale. By contrast, vitamin C in skincare rates under 100,000. Herbal Face Food is using all post-consumer recycled materials and packaging. They use glass and aluminum, which is super easy to recycle as well. The products and packaging are 99% free of plastics. They contain no ingredients that involve the destruction or harm of any plant, animal, or marine life. These are 100% plants only, these products. These active concentrates are coming from the seeds, the fruits, the leaves, or the flowers of the plants only. These products have been a complete revolution for me. I know that you will love the way your skin looks and feels after using it even for just a day or two. And the best part is that Herbal Face Food has offered us, you, my community, a code to receive 20% off forever, ever. The code is capital ELENA 20. Once again, that's my name in all caps, Elena 2020. The site is herbalfacefood.com. The code is all caps Elena 20. It's not just your first purchase, it's any purchase. You will love these products, and I am so grateful, Herbal Face Food, for the change that you have made in my life. Thank you. Welcome to the Practice You podcast. My name is Elena Brower. Let's dive into today's conversation regarding life's myriad transitions and how we refine our responses in our relationships, our wellness, our households, our work, and in our practices. You are invited to learn and love and listen with me. Welcome to Practice You. Welcome back to the podcast. I have with me a very dear new friend with whom I have managed to spend several hours at the initial part of our meeting. Kemi Nekvapil is one of Australia's leading credentialed coaches for female executives and entrepreneurs. She's an author. She's a highly sought-after international speaker. She has studied leadership and purpose at the Gross National Happiness Center in Bhutan. Yes, you heard me correctly. As well as with Dr. Brené Brown. She's a certified Dare to Lead facilitator. She has been working with teams and organizations to create daring leaders and courageous cultures. I can read on, but she's a regular interviewer of several industry icons, including Elizabeth Gilbert, Martha Beck, Marie Forleo, as a facilitator for the Hunger Project Australia. She hosts a popular podcast called The Shift Series. My favorite part of Kemi, though, and I will tell you how we met in a moment because that is one of my favorites, but she gives a free resource from her website. And I need you to know how solid this resource is. You know how sometimes you go on a website, our listener, and it's like, it's okay. You know, this is a full-fledged many pages of self-coaching check-in, 10 pages to be exact, a beautiful layout. It has helped me so much since I went to her site, since we met in person just a few weeks ago. So Kemi, just welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being my friend, and thank you for giving me a chance to love you.
Oh, wow. You can't see me, but I am grinning from ear to ear. It is so delightful to speak with you. Can you? Yeah, I'm just grinning with you. I don't even know how many pages that resource is, so I'm very impressed that you know how many pages it is.
I did it.
Yeah.
I did it all.
Yeah.
Welcome to yourself. Page 2, self-awareness, personal fulfillment, emotions, boundaries. It's genius. Goals and focus. This is exactly what I hope to, in some marginal way, in some messy way, provide to my humans. It's beautiful.
I believe in the power of self-coaching. You know, I believe that if we give ourselves the space and the time to reflect, there are a lot of answers that we have internally. It's just that many of us don't give ourselves the time and space to reflect.
And I am living proof of that because I needed some answers and there's nowhere else for me to go at certain points in my arc. And this really helped me in the last few weeks. There were some big things that I had to decide about, and this really helped me.
I'm glad.
We met because I was walking the streets of Santa Fe about to go to a writing workshop that was on. Kemi happened to be in town for it as a student. We happened to land on the same street in the same moment. I pulled over to answer a text. You know, when you're walking and you sort of pull over because you don't want to just be standing in the middle of the sidewalk. At least that's a habit I got into in New York. So I pulled over on the side of the street in Santa Fe, which I didn't really have to be. And who walks up? Kemi Nakvapil. And I'm just like, are you kidding me right now? We have been trying to meet and hook up and do this podcast for a very long time. It is blowing my mind. I'm having such a total fangirl moment. We end up literally being glued at the hip for the remainder of the weekend.
So true.
So much so that at one point she ended up getting chosen to give a talk during the weekend, which was incredible. And during the fact of her giving the talk, I went home and I made her some really mediocre, but very delicious.
Very delicious.
But mediocre in texture. Almond flour chocolate chip loaf.
Mm.
It was pretty great, actually.
It was actually
and
very
I
good.
Proceeded to, I sat next to her while you were giving your sort of hellos and greetings to the people online after your talk. I sat down right behind her and just off to her left and sort of was giving out chocolate chip loaf and smiles to people. It was so lovely.
Such a memory.
Such a lovely time.
Thank you for baking me a cake.
You know, that's sometimes what one does. I don't even know how it happened. Your book, Power, is something that has changed me a great deal. It has given me a lot of insight into what it means to be a Black woman. And I have picked... Actually, I'm going to read to our listener first what power stands for, and then we'll get into it. Presence is the P, and presence to understand what is and is not working in our lives is the P in power. The O in power is ownership of our personal narratives, particularly our power stories, the stories where we really showed up. Wisdom is the W. Wisdom about our needs, boundaries, growth. Equality, of course, is the E. As part of the diverse human family, all of us worthy. And responsibility, of course, the R, responsibility for our choices, for our healing, and for our happiness. I've chosen a handful of sections to walk us through today, and I think these are important for our times. These are important for you, me personally, and for all of us. And the first is the power of heritage. And our listener, it's important to know, if you haven't picked up this book yet, I promise you will not be sad that you did. If you want to write also, it's a wonderful way to get reacquainted with yourself and your own stories through the stories that Kemi tells. And the story you tell here is regarding yourself when you were, I'm on page 108 right now, you were filming something and you introduced yourself. After you broke for lunch, you walked over to a group of people, you introduced yourself, and someone said, "You don't sound black, you sound white." And sorry for the long snort. And someone else added, this is the worst part, someone else added, "A proper coconut." And I didn't know this at the time until reading your words, and you didn't know it either, but a coconut is a term used to describe someone who's black or brown on the outside, but, quote, white on the inside, implying that they're not connected to their culture. I identify with this, not as a person with brown skin, but as a person of the Jewish faith. I have hidden it. I can't tell you how many times.
And, you know, for me, the sort of context around that story as well is having grown up as a young black girl in a white majority, I kept getting told, you know, when you're with black people, they're your people, they're your people. And I was one of the tens of thousands of Nigerian children that were fostered to white families in the 1960s, 70s and 80s. And so I always had this sense, even from my white foster families, of, you know, black people are your people. Like, you kind of are here, but you don't really belong with us. You belong with them. And so I remember in my late teens, traveling to London on the train, which felt like a very important thing, or mid-teens actually, and I was so excited about meeting black people because I had been told they're your people. And the only black people I'd spent quality time with was with my birth mother and some of my siblings and some of my aunties at various school holidays. But, you know, I was excited to meet these people that I was told were my people. And so to have that experience where I approached this group of what I had been told, this is where you belong, these are your people, and for them to say, oh, no, you might look like us, but you're not like us. You sound different. And in that moment, I also had to take ownership for myself that there was a part of my heritage that I wasn't connected to because I had been fostered in white families and I only saw my Nigerian birth mother at certain times. But there was a sense of shame that I should know more. There was a sense of complete devastation and anguish of, well, if I don't belong with you and I don't belong with them, like, where do I belong? How do I work in the world? And on the train back home, not feeling how I thought I was going to feel, I did make a decision of, oh, okay, so I don't belong there and I don't belong there. So I think I'm going to have to belong to myself first. I think I'm going to have to be Kemi. And that was a moment. That wasn't the moment I stood in my power or anything like that, but that was the first awareness of maybe the way that you're going to have to navigate your world is not with your lens towards belonging to a group of people, but belonging to yourself first.
Which is pretty much where Brené Brown took Dare to Lead. Was that, or was that the other book? Was it called Brave?
Braving the Wilderness. Yeah, Braving the Wilderness.
Thank you. Yeah. And several other wonderful teachers have talked about belonging. And thank you for providing that context. I circled the page, folded it down, underlined the lines, and forgot to mention the sort of beginning of that part.
But I'm curious, Elena, are you happy as well to share in terms of your Jewishness? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, most of my life I've sort of not been forthcoming about that. And, you know, I sort of went along with people having conversations that were not really welcoming to Jews. Worse, it's so like, it's very painful. It's very hurtful things that were said and like curse words, real profanity. I feel now a little more connected to it, but you know, with the current climate, the last few years even, I've sort of taken the overt signs of my Judaism out of the picture. And for better or for worse, I know that there are certain friends who will be, oh yes, you know, shaking their heads, I really understand. And then there are certain friends who will be like, oh, that's horrifying. It's just what feels right to me.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, at the end of that chapter and the chapter of heritage, the ownership part of me is owning, yes, I have Nigerian heritage. I am born in England. I live in Australia. I don't like hip hop. I love Dolly Parton. I spend a lot of time in my garden. You know, there are many things where we ignite our power by taking full ownership of who we are, not who we are supposed to be or who we're told we should be or who we hope we are, but who we actually are. There is power in owning this is who I am without apology.
Page 110 for our listener. Now I own my Nigerian heritage. I own my English culture. I have pride in both. And I can honor that pride in whatever way I choose. Those are your words. There's power in owning our heritage on our own terms. You have, at the end of each section, Kemi, a process that you take people through, really beautiful prompts. At the end of this particular section, what negative beliefs, if any, do you have about your heritage? And mine, I wrote down, at times I feel like Jews are weak, and I'm scared that we will be eradicated from the earth. How have these beliefs played out in your life? Hiding, lying about my religion. And then how has holding these beliefs affected your power? And this is a really interesting question for me because I do feel like it's diminished my power and I don't know where to put all of this information, but I'm putting it under the lens as a result of reading this book and considering this conversation. And it will be a part of my ongoing observation, even as I have taken Buddhist precepts and fully committed to that path.
And it's the awareness as well, you know, that we can, it's taking the time to look at these honest answers and then to sit with the awareness. You know, we live in a culture that has such an action bias. And obviously, as a coach, I do have an action bias. I believe that insights are fantastic. But unless we take action on those insights, nothing is going to shift or transform or change. But we have to sit with and process the awareness first. That is how we honor our stories.
Thank you. Yeah. Processing this awareness is going to take some time. The sixth chapter, The Power of Your Blackness. You referenced the Black Lives Matter movement beginning in 2013, George Floyd's murder 2020, the catalysts for garnering global attention. But you also acknowledge that in both the country you live in, Australia, and the country you were born in, England, Black people are still being murdered because of systemic racism. And I do not want to let this conversation die. It's part of my work, my ongoing work in my own heart and in my own life, and the things that I share to not let this conversation die. The exhaustion and the heartbreak that you have endured, you personally, and Black women, Black humans, brown humans everywhere. The handwritten letter from your husband is epic. And I wonder if it's okay to read just the first paragraph to our listener. Is that cool?
For you or for me?
Either one, 234. You can request that I read it or you can read it yourself.
I'm happy to read it, actually. And it's interesting as well. I just want to speak to what you just said about what's happening to Black people globally. In Australia, less than 7 days ago, Australia voted that First Nations people could not have a voice to Parliament about things and issues that impact their lives. Indigenous First Nations people in Australia are 3% of the population. And we as a country decided that they don't get a voice. It adds to the heartbreak and the devastation. And it also reminds those of us that are in allies with our First Nations people that we have a lot of work to do.
How on God's green earth in 2023 could something like that happen?
This is, I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. But it did. That is the reality that we are living in right now.
So your husband has a view from inside of this system. Mm. And I would love for you to give our listeners some context if you're keen.
Yes.
And then read as much as you like.
So my husband, and I talk in the book about systems that take away our power, patriarchy, homophobia, transphobia, racism, ableism, all of the things. And I am married to a man that sits within that demographic of a form of power that, you know, is considered power over, which is the patriarchal model. So my husband, Emrys, is white, able-bodied, heterosexual, Christian, all the things. And he's a barrister. He's a lawyer as well. And we've been together for 20 years now. And so, you know, we have learned a lot about how each of us get to navigate the world and the stories we have been told about how we get to be in the world. And so after I wrote a letter on my blog called The Power of My Blackness, Emrys then wrote me a handwritten letter that I wasn't expecting the day after I had posted that. And I will share a little bit from his letter. My dear Kemi, I am, always have been, and always will be white. People see me and immediately know that I can be trusted, believed, adored, that I am worthy of attention, and that I am one of the club, the family, that they can be candid and tell me the old school jokes, that I can keep secrets, that I am one who belongs to the real order automatically, that I sailed the seas and conquered and enslaved and earned my place with them at the top, that I deserve genetically or by God-given right to belong with them in the middle, at the top, in the right suburbs, at the right schools, in parliament and the courts and the clubs, that I am suitable, appropriate, necessary, that I belong anywhere and that I can do everything or anything or not as I choose, that I am right, able, and authoritative, and all of that from one glance, one impression, just of how I look. What a valuable gift, a magic charm which gives me so much just when people see me for a moment, for a glance. I have heard since birth a soft and soothing lullaby. You are right and you are good. You deserve everything that comes your way. The world is your oyster and the pearls inside it are yours. Can you imagine how nice it is to hear that song, to see what the world has to offer, to see what people are prepared to give me, what society is prepared to afford me, just because of who I am? And I will jump. I have never heard this song more truly. It has never seemed more urgent or true than when you have sung it to me. I cannot give back what has been given to me because of my whiteness, because that has already been taken. But I can promise you this. I will do whatever I can to not be silent while the lullaby continues. I will do what I can to raise and amplify the voices singing the song of truth. And in my own awkward way, awkward because I have been raised on the lullaby and it is the only song I really know, I will try to sing the wrong notes, to squawk, or shout, to disharmonize, to try to create dissonance, anything but unison or silence, in the hope that I and others can tune into the lullaby and realize it is a song, not the truth. And then I hope, listen for those other songs that tell us, this was taken, not given. This is right, not wrong. And I promise you also that within our marriage and within our home, I will always listen to you if you tell me that I am singing the lullaby and that I will believe you because you can hear it for what it is in a way that I will never be able to do. All my love, Emrys.
What a champion.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
I cannot wait to meet this dude.
He can't wait to meet you either. Yeah.
No, seriously.
Yeah. You know, it's...
Thank you, Element, for sponsoring the Practice You podcast. We have been personally using Element for well over a year. Element is spelled L-M-N-T. Elemental electrolyte salts that have completely changed the game around my house. Every night before bed, James and I split a packet. Helps us sleep, helps us get good solid rest, and helps combat fatigue, muscle pain, fogginess, irritability even. Did you know that your cells need electrolytes for optimal function? And if you're struggling with any of those things, you might just be deficient in electrolytes. They facilitate hundreds of cellular functions in your body, including nerves, hormone regulation, nutrient absorption, fluid balance. Element contains 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams of magnesium. No artificial anything in here, no sugar, no nothing. My favorite flavors, as I said, orange, watermelon, and the chocolate caramel in hot water is just incredible. Element comes in tiny single-serving packets you can carry with you wherever you go. They're great on planes as well. With my link, you get a free sample pack with any order so that you can try all the flavors. And that link is drinkelement.com/Elena. The spelling is drinkelement.com/Elena. Thank you. Thank you so much again, Element. Again, the link, drinkelement.com/Elena.
Been a lesson. When I first came to Australia, he said to me, oh, you know, Australia is a really multicultural place. We have lots of Greeks and Italians here. Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah. And it wasn't until, you know, he was taking me around Melbourne, which is actually known as the land of the Wurundjeri. They're the First Nations people's land. We were driving in a particular area and he said to me, you know, this is where the Vietnamese live and this is where the Africans live. And I said, oh, in ghettos. He goes, no. I said, hey, babe. If there are a group of people that are congregated in one particular area in the lowest income housing in a city, they are called ghettos. And his humility and his openness to go, oh my gosh, I hadn't thought of that. Like, that's true. As opposed to defending or no, that's not true or gaslighting me or, you know, and that's been our journey together. You know, I've learned from him that I am allowed to stand in spaces and places that I have been told I am historically not allowed to be in if I want to be there. And I add that as the end of the sentence. And he has learnt that not everyone wants to hear his voice, that not everyone's experience is the same as his, and that, you know, that sometimes he needs to stand back and let other people speak. And he does that in his work. He focuses a lot on First Nations rights and environmental law, which is tough when you lose cases where old growth forests are cut down or Indigenous deaths are told, oh no, it was an accident, it just happened to happen in a police cell. That takes its toll, but he is an incredible human doing important work.
Mm. Wow. And you too have kids.
Yes.
Beautiful two children. You told me a story when you were here having tea with me that really touched my heart, that I pulled out my copy of Power and wrote it into the book so that we could discuss it when this time came. And it's in the section on the power of values. You define values as principles or standards of behavior, one's judgment of what is important in life. So our listener, you can start to tune into what your values are for today. We're not going to hold you to them, but for today, what your values are. You shared with me, Kemi, at one point that your daughter, who is transitioning, if I'm not correct.
No, they've changed their pronouns. So they're not transitioning, they're not trans, but they told us when they were 14, I will not be restricted by pronouns. I will be in the world as who I want to be. And actually they said to me, Mum, I promise you, I will never be the good girl that you had to be. And I'll be honest, Elena, I was like, oh, seriously, can you be sometimes though? Could you just sometimes, just for me, just in the home, could you? But no, obviously that was an incredible moment for me to hear them say, I will not be limited by the way that you were limited.
Which is the line that I wrote down, and it blew my mind.
Mm.
Obviously, your parenting is so spacious, full of acceptance, full of understanding, that they would just say to you outright, I will never be the good girl you had to be.
Mm. Yes.
Which has shaped who you are in many ways.
100%.
Wow. It's just a wow.
And the spaciousness, though, you know, I would definitely say that between my husband and I, he is the one where spaciousness is very much a part of his being, whereas I have had to learn that. I have had to learn.
Tell me more about that.
Well, coming from a background where I didn't have any control or any power in my environment or where I want or where I went or who my parents were going to be, I can default to control of my environments and that power over model, you know, that my safety comes from me knowing exactly what's going to happen all the time, knowing that this space and this environment is exactly how I need it to be all the time. And I have learned, you know, especially as they become teenagers, these young people, that if we as parents don't look at what has our wounding been, that maybe we're trying to hold on too tight and controlling them and stepping into that power over model, that we will lose relationship with our children. So, you know, I don't want to give the impression that I've just been this kind of, oh, yes, I'll just, you know, I have had to look at the impact of when I have tried to power over and how that hasn't worked for me or my children. And I have had to learn how to create that space of powering with and power to, the questions of what is reasonable here, you know, the questions of what do you think are my concerns about you maybe going to that particular thing or stepping into this particular opportunity, and having an open dialogue with them. It's been a practice for me and it's been great. My 19-year-old has actually moved out of home. I was very committed to raising independent children. And so that's great that he has the confidence and the life skills to be able to move out of home at this time. But with our 17-year-old, you know, I am still learning with them. And, you know, we went to yoga together the other day, and they don't know this, but I know they won't listen to this podcast. You know, we're lying in Savasana next to each other, and I'm crying at the absolute privilege it is to have your 17-year-old want to be with you and be in spiritual practice that they have watched you do since their birth, and they say to you, let's do yoga together. What a gift.
That's epic. And it speaks volumes to your willingness to learn how to be taking on that spaciousness that your husband finds so natural, that this kid is really happy to be themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And it goes the other way, because my husband is learning about boundaries. You know, so it's,
right.
You know, it's the yin and yang, the duality, you know, and I say to my children all the time, you chose both of us. You chose us both, and you chose your father for everything he is and everything he isn't, and you chose me for everything, you know, I am and everything I'm not, in the same way that we choose and love you for exactly the same things. They know to go to their dad first if they want anything, because they're likely to get a yes, you know. And they know to come to me for other things, and that's great. You know, we can honor all parts of ourselves.
I can't thank you enough, and I know that any parent listening is going to take some very real lesson away from that. I was talking randomly today to sort of add to this and affirm and also ask a question. I was talking to an insurance agent today, and we somehow got on the topic of parenting teens. He sort of was flippant about it, like, oh, teenagers. And I'm like feeling the way you are, like, oh, teenagers, delicious. Like, I'm having such a great time. And I said, so have you ever asked these people, your teenagers in your house, what you could be doing better? And the phone just went dead. And he was just like, what? Really? You can do that? And I was like, oh my God, yes. And I'm giving you all my business for being so willing to listen and ask these questions. And here's my phone number. Call me back when you've talked to your kids tonight. Tell them that you're going to be giving them more respect in the house and more voice. and you would like to see how it feels for them, for you to be more respectful of them.
Mm.
And he just, wow, he was blown away. But I think that's what you do,
Kemi. It's part of this thing around, you know, the ownership part of power. It's, we have to own our stories. And there is this narrative around teenagers that is disempowering to them and it's disempowering to us. Now, it's not that it's not incredibly hard. And for those of us that have had to parent teenagers through and post-pandemic, you know, our young people are having to deal with things in terms of their mental health and anxiety and all of those things that we just didn't have to deal with in the same way, or at least there wasn't language around it. You know, so 100% there are things that we have to navigate with them that can be incredibly challenging. And yet, oh my gosh, this is the generation that is literally redefining our language around what it is to be inclusive and to see people in their full humanity. And it actually makes me feel emotional, because if we don't get on board with this, if our young people come to us and say, I want to change my pronouns, I want to be a they, them, or I want to be a she, they, we can make it about us and we can go, I don't understand why. Like, this is just a fad. Yeah, we can do that. And what we're doing in that moment is saying, my understanding of you is more important than you knowing that I respect you. We have to put ourselves aside. We have to put ourselves aside. And look, maybe in 6 months, maybe in a year, my young person is going to come to me and say, oh, I've changed my mind, actually. I'm going back. And I'd be like, okay, cool, not a problem. You know, we tried that on. If you have changed your mind, that is absolutely fine. And I get that for parents that are with trans children, this is a very different conversation. I want to honor that. But for those of us where our young people want to change their pronouns, this is how simple it is. It's the equivalent of me saying to someone, my name is Kemi, and then saying, yeah, but I'm going to call you Philip. And me going, no, sorry, my name is Kemi. Can you call me Kemi? No, Philip's just easier for me. So that's what I'm going to call you. Like, how disrespectful is that? So for me, the opportunity for us that are parenting these young people is to step up into the world that they are creating for themselves and future generations. That is a privilege and that is an honor. And yes, is it hard to change pronouns? Yes. Do we get it wrong? Of course we do. But does it show our respect and love? 100%.
Mm. Thank you so much for that. You know, if I'm honest, I really needed to hear that. And that's what I'm going to say. I'm going to leave it right there. The power of privilege is the last section that I wanted to talk about with you. The quote that you begin with, quote, if you have an advantage, you don't hoard it. You share it. You reach out. You give back. That's a quote from Michelle Obama, who definitely exemplifies and embodies that sentiment. And I think for, you know, if there's anyone listening, if you feel like, oh, God, privilege, I don't want to have this conversation anymore. I have it. I don't know what to do about it. Well, you know, it's frustrating. All I can say is no need to feel ashamed, bombarded, burdened, or overwhelmed. Think about where you can actually put it to good work. I sleep very well now that I have a lot of volunteer tasks and am putting my privilege in places where it's really serving. And I thought it might be interesting to talk about the various forms of privilege on page 273.
And one of the things that I say is that feeling guilty about one's privilege is really boring. It is not powerful at all. It's boring. You know,
opposite.
Yeah, I have privileges. English is my first language. I have an Australian and English passport. I live in a major city and I own land. I own a farm. I'm a custodian of land. You know, I have money in the bank. I can buy anything I want or I need. And then there are privileges I don't have. I don't have race privilege and I don't have gender privilege and I don't have higher education privilege. Now, they are really big lenses, especially race and gender. You know, not having those privileges is a defining factor of how I get to navigate the world and the things that I've had to unlearn about that. But in terms of my other privileges, what a gift to have privileges that I can walk alongside other people that don't have those privileges. The definition of a privilege is something that you have that you did not ask for, or something that you have that if somebody else worked every single hour of the day, they could never attain. Now, we can feel guilty about our privileges, or we can do really powerful things. Now, for you, Elena, you said that's volunteering. For some people, it's not even volunteering. It's, you know, one of the things that I'll do if I'm walking into a public lavatory and the cleaner is in there, you know, just being able to thank them, you know, that I have the privilege that that is not a job that I have to do. Now, maybe that cleaner of the public toilets, maybe that's what they've always wanted to do. I'm making an assumption that that maybe wasn't what they wanted to do. And so for me, it's like the least I can do in the privileges that I have is acknowledge the person that is making this space clean for me and many other people. I was at a very, very well-known yoga retreat in Ubud, Bali, earlier in the year. What was incredible to me as a Black person, being on a land of brown people and watching people that have a race privilege that I don't have, walking past these brown people that were cleaning mats that they had just done yoga on and just not even acknowledging these people.
Oh.
And I just thought, it's amazing. It's amazing that it's not seen, but it's also what my husband talks about in his letter and taking ownership of that, that if you are being told as an Anglo person, if you have experienced and lived in the world of like, that your reality is that there's a lot of people on this world that are here to serve you, then of course you don't see the brown people that are cleaning your mats, because part of the lullaby is, well, they're here to clean your mats. But if you don't have that privilege, you see it and you acknowledge it. And so there's light and shadow to all of our privileges. It's taking ownership that we have them, that we get to ignite our power and ignite the power in others. When I work with executives, when I work with female executives in, you know, that are sitting in boardrooms when they are maybe the only woman in that room, they understand they have a privilege of even being in that room. You know, their lack of gender privilege around being in that room means that maybe they're not owning their power, or they're not speaking up, or they're not sharing their opinion. So in the way that I talk about power in the book is that it's not linear, that we will give it away, it'll get taken away. It's the same with our privileges. You know, we will feel comfortable about them in some aspects and we'll feel uncomfortable about them in other aspects, but feeling guilty is not powerful.
Thank you so much for that. I actually was talking to a client recently, a private mentoring client, and she was talking about feeling guilty. And I said, any woman over 35 is disallowed from feeling guilt over anything ever again. So you can wipe it off the slate because it's not here.
Yeah. And we need to get curious. You know, that's the other thing as well, is to get curious about where does that guilt come from? And, you know, possibly, what is the benefit to you of your guilt? That's where I'd be going with a one-to-one class. What is the benefit to you of your guilt? If we take on and get curious about every single behavior that we have, you know, has a shadow side and it has a positive side to it. What is the benefit of walking around feeling guilty about things that you didn't ask for or that other people in your world will never have?
Thank you for that. The various privileges that you named, just for our listener, just to get curious about your own. This is what my privilege looks like, says Kemi. Birthplace privilege. I was born in England. Language privilege, as you mentioned, English is first. Passport privilege. You have both a British and an Australian passport. That's so badass. Socioeconomic privilege. I can buy whatever I need or want. Location privilege. Live in a major Australian city. Able-bodied privilege. Do not have a disability. Cisgendered privilege. I look like and identify as a woman, although you do make the joke that you're mistaken for a man at least 6 times a year. Privileges you don't have. Race, gender, higher education. Just think about it. Our listener, you know, what privileges do you have? In the prompts at the end of this chapter, Kemi asks, to page 274, what privileges do you not have? How can you use your privilege for good? And what is one action that you can take today to take full responsibility for what you have for your privilege?
Yeah, I would add to that list now as well, is that I'm neurotypical. And the things that I have been really learning over the last couple of years in working with my clients, I have quite a few neurodivergent clients. So, you know, I am learning around what it is to be neurodivergent. And because I'm able-bodied, you know, I have a couple of friends and they have been new friends over the last few years who are in wheelchairs and another friend that has disabilities that are not visible. And I am known within my circles because I have a chefing and a baking background. So I love food. I'm a foodie. I live in Melbourne. And so normally it's my role to decide where, you know, we go to eat, because everyone knows I've kind of got my hand on the pulse of the places to eat. And I suddenly realize, oh my gosh, this is not for you to decide, because you don't know how wide that door is. You don't know if there's a ramp to that cafe. You don't know what the accessibility is to those toilets. And so, you know, for me, that's what I'm learning about my able-bodied privilege, is that people don't get to be in the world. And one of my friends was sharing with me, like, I woke up, I felt really, really great. You know, I got into the particular Uber that I knew had accessibility. I had phoned the venue to just check what was the accessibility for my wheelchair. And then I get there, and for whatever reason, the ramp was closed off and my only option was stairs, which are not an option. And I sat there in my wheelchair looking at the stairs, knowing that I just had to turn around and go home. And we spoke about what that's like in terms of waking up, feeling good, you know, set, getting ready for your day, and then encountering racism, and how you have to decide in that moment, is this the time where I stand up and name what's just happened? Is this the time where I laugh it off? Is this the time where I go back to my car and burst into tears? Is this the time where I call it out? You know, it's the same for my friend. It was like, is this the time where I try and call someone from the wheelchair at the bottom of the stairs and call the venue and say, hey, I'm outside? Is this the time where I call the Uber and just take me back home and I go to bed and cry for the rest of the day? You know, we all get to navigate the world in different ways. And the more that we're open to understanding that it does not look the same for all of us, the more we can ignite and elevate the power of others as well as ourselves.
Thank you. This book, Power, is out. It is an absolute must if you are leading in any way, whether it's in your family or in your work. I want to remind you of the acronym. Power stands for presence, ownership, wisdom, equality, and responsibility. These are simple concepts, and these are deep questions that Kemi asks us to consider, ponder, and also ask ourselves. And I'm just so thankful, Kemi, for the warmth, the kindness, the welcoming that you gave me in my own town, and the sweetness that you inspired to come bursting out of me through cooking and friendship. I'm a changed person for having met you, and I truly appreciate your presence in my life.
Oh, thank you so much, Elena. I feel exactly the same. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your grounded leadership. And thank you for baking me a chocolate chip cake. This friendship is now cemented and locked in.
Yes, ma'am. We got started on good footing.
We did. We started well.
We did. I'm wishing you a wonderful day. Will you please send my love to Emrys and tell him as soon as possible we shall meet?
Thank you. And please send my love to James.
I will. And send me more pictures of your flowers in your garden. Okay. Those I really appreciate whenever you're inspired.
I will.
Okay. Love you.
Love you too. Take care.
You too. Thank you, AG1, for sponsoring the Practice You podcast. My listener, you've been hearing me talk about AG1 for some time. I think I've been taking it daily for almost 3 years. 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens in one scoop in the morning. The best way to start your day. Supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and longevity. The conversation of the moment. The taste is delicious. It's suitable whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. It contains less than 1 gram of sugar. No nonsense in here at all. It's a multivitamin that your body will actually absorb. If you are wanting to make an investment in your health and longevity, AG1 costs you less than $3 a day far less expensive and definitely less time-consuming than many different supplements. Reclaim your health, arm your immune system with convenient, delicious daily nutrition. And since you listen to the Practice You podcast, Athletic Greens is giving you a free one-year supply of immune-boosting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is go to athleticgreens.com/Elena. Once again, that's athleticgreens.com/ELENA. Take ownership of your health, my listener. And thank you, Athletic Greens and AG1.